So maybe to start here, I'm going to make a disclaimer on this phrase, Willard served so many years in El Salvador. Because when I think of service like that, I went into service. I did at Faith Mission for a year. I've seen way too many people go to service. They do a good work for a little bit of time and then they leave. So I like to think of it, I lived in El Salvador and I tried to do what was asked of me. Anyway, and if you'll allow me, I'd like to make a few comments on your subject, Thomas. First of all, I really learned to know your dad, John, and your stepmother, Mabel, in 1986 and 87 in El Salvador. And we, my impression still today is John was one of the kindest, most generous, a man of integrity. I just love that. I just love that man. And yeah, left a big hole. So I see a lot of him in you. The other comment I wanted to make, when you shared the story about the tornado going through and then the difference between mutual aid and insurance. Some years ago, my sister and her husband, living in Missouri, he has a cabinet shop. He had a very nice metal building cabinet shop with their house on the other end. And they were gone one weekend when there was a fire and it destroyed everything they had, their possessions, the cabinet shop, everything was gone. They were in somewhere in the West and they turned around and drove the 24, 30 something hours home and got there to total devastation. And they're part of the Fellowship Church in Missouri, and they do not have insurance. They've decided as a church that they wouldn't carry insurance on their property. And my first question was, now you probably wish. I didn't ask him that, but I said, now you probably wish you would have insurance. But I didn't ask him that because Dale and I get along really well. I respect some of the things he thinks is different than I, but hey, we are family. I couldn't believe the mutual aid that happened. 9 weeks after the fire, they had a new building, fully furnished with a cabinet shop, and they started operations. 9 weeks. I asked him, Dale, how much money were you out of pocket? Because I knew stuff was donated, labor was donated. He told me $12,000. A great testimony of mutual aid. And no, they don't live in the same building as this cabinet shop today. They built a separate house. Okay, to my topic. Doing business God's way. A Christian's perspective on ethics, purpose, and prosperity. And I just found out that most of us here are business owners. Wow. So I'm talking to people who know what they're doing, right? So I can go sit down. Yeah, I'll share what I've got here. Why do we do business? Why do we have a business? I mean, is it to put money in our pocket, or is it because we can't work for somebody else, so we own a business? Is it because, well, we all need to provide for a family, so we chose to have a business. We own a business. We do that business so we can put food on the table. Well, there are three basic needs in life, right? We need food, shelter, and clothes. So we can do that by owning a business, or we can do that by working for somebody, or we can go to Puerto Rico and get welfare. Is it so we can provide job opportunities for others? I hope so. Is it so we can help the community when the community has needs? I hope so. Is it to make or to help the church we're a part of become better, or maybe to help in missions? I hope so. What's your reason? What's your reason for doing business? I'd love to hear from you. And this may not actually get recorded, but I'd still love to hear from you.
Should be a calling.
A calling, okay. Should be a calling. Okay. Anyone else? I think that as a Christian, our Christian faith offers a unique foundation for integrity, for fairness, and a deep sense of purpose in our professional lives. I think we have such an advantage because of our personal relationship with Jesus Christ offers that unique foundation. It's not just a way to earn money. It does that, or we hope it does, right? I mean, that's the goal. But it's also a way to serve others, to contribute to the common good or the needs around us. And maybe I should have said first, it's to honor God. And I'll talk about that just a little bit later, what it means to honor God in our business. Did you know that the way that you do your business affects the community, affects your church, it affects your family, it affects the school? Pretty much everything that you are involved in is affected by the way that we do our business. Wow. So I work for Asad full time. My wife and I operate an Airbnb business full time. Well, mostly full time. We have 8 different listings, so it's kind of full time. You know? We don't touch many people's lives in our community because people that live in our community aren't going to come to rent one of our houses. But the people that come in, how do they see Sharon and I? You know, if they have a problem, do I brush them off or do I respond to that need? We've gotten, our goal is obviously if someone messages us or gets our phone number and calls us, hey, we got a problem at the house, I try to be there. And if I can't be there, I try to get someone there soon. I mean, what's the point in having short-term rental if you don't care about the people that show up, right? So the first thing that I think of when I think of doing business God's way, of course, is integrity. I think all of us would say, no, we practice integrity. We want to be the most honest person as a Christian. We want to do things right. We want to be fair. And it would be interesting to take a poll here to see what kinds of different businesses that we're all involved in. But we all have customers, right? And we very likely all have employees, unless you have a business that's small enough that you're the only one doing this. But can you have a business without having customers? I haven't found it yet. And so are we fair? Are we honest? Are we men and women of integrity? I have a friend in Costa Rica who told me that one of his employees came to him here some time ago. He was responsible for closing a business deal, or I'm not sure exactly what all was going on, but the employee asked him, can I do this, which involved not disclosing everything and being a bit quiet, being quiet about some details of it, which would maybe make a little bit more for the company. And my friend looked at me and said, well, what do you think we should do? He said, oh, well, I thought I'd ask. I know what you're going to say. Is that how we operate our business, to where even our employees know, maybe even without asking, what the right thing is to do? Do we do our business? Do we have our business to serve others? Or is it to increase our bank account? Or is it to show the community that I can build a better house than my competitor? Maybe you can. because you've learned how to do it right. Jay builds houses or has built houses. He told me a story, told me about something. He just got a call the other day about something that failed in a house he built a number of years ago, that he has never in all his life of experience of building houses that, and what do you call it, an I-beam? An I-joist failed and cracked. He's never seen it. I'm interested to know what he's going to do about this. This is while he was away from home. He's not home yet, so we'll see what, you know. Those things come up, things that we don't know and things that we didn't expect. How is our response? You say, well, that's a long time ago. There's nothing I can do about that. Or can we? Serving others. This same friend in Costa Rica told me, too, that he has, in recent year, has made a special effort of involving his employees in reaching out to the community, in helping things. And perhaps when I tell this story, some of you will know who I'm talking about. Recently, there was a flood somewhere there in Costa Rica. And this friend took his refurbished military trucks out and carried people to safety, brought in supplies through the water. And in that way, he was able to serve the community in times of need. Two of his employees came to him and said, we would like to go and buy school supplies and give them out to the children in the community. And he said, it's a great idea. How are you thinking of paying for this? And the one said, who's the accountant in his business, she said, well, we think $200, and we've got that extra in the account that over and above what we expected. We thought maybe it'd allow us to use that. And he says, take $300 and buy extra bags. And those two ladies had the greatest joy, he said, in going out, buying everything, bagging the things up, and then passing them out to the children. He says, they'll do this over and over. And for all you know, they'll end up paying for it themselves one time because they found such great joy. I think Thomas alluded to this. Maybe it was John Lennox that actually said it, that our work, our business, is also worship. I thought, well, we could have just combined notes here and you could have just said everything in one and it'd be done. But I remember years ago, I was supposed to be teaching music at in El Salvador at the two-week Bible Institute. And I think the committee wanted me to get up and teach them the do, re, mi, fa's and all that stuff with the clefs and stuff, but it was impressed upon me to share at least part of the hour session on what it means to live life in worship to the Father. And now I'm seeing that the way... It's snowing. Did y'all see that? I live in Kansas and I want to get home Monday, so pray that it doesn't snow a whole lot. We do our business, should do our business. Our business can be a form of worship. Let me explain. First of all, in Colossians, Paul says, whatever you do, do it with all your heart because it's to the Lord. You're working for God, not for man. Since you know that you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward. So it's the work, the business is not just a means to an end. It's a form of worship. It's an opportunity to glorify God. So, how do you treat your employees? Or how do you conduct business? So I told you about my friend in Costa Rica. He did business, he lived life in a way that his employee deep down knew the response would be, but he thought he'd ask anyway. I hope the next time he won't ask, he'll just do the right thing. But do our employees see us, see the business as, or see us as business owners as a person who is deeply committed to worshiping God and deeply committed to doing what is right? Or do they see us as someone who's doing everything possible to get the best deal? To, you know, we charge the highest prices and we pay the least out for labor or for wages and stuff. How do they view us? I'm going to give you an example of something that happened to Sharon and I. And it wasn't an employee, but it was during our time in El Salvador. Maybe I should give the history. So in just a little bit of back history, from 85 to 88, we were in El Salvador. And yes, we did a term of service because we were there for 3 years, went home. But 12 years later, we felt at what at the time felt like a strong call to go back. We didn't know for sure what it would look like. And we ended up at a place, a new place that the mission was starting up. So, you know, we built the house. And then I was 100% convinced that if I was going to be any good as a missionary in El Salvador or anywhere, I needed a business to work at, not just visit people, teach and preach, and be the foreign missionary. And so, you know, I spent quite a few years, built the house, built 4 chicken houses, built a shop, was mixing feed, was selling eggs, working hard in the community, built relationships in the community that were business relationships that I probably would, I learned to know people that I would never have learned to know had I just been the foreign missionary. Both have its places. But the example I wanted to give you for today is, there was this young man. He moved into the community from it was a town not very far away, but still a couple hours away. He was a gang member, and he had to get away from his town and move somewhere where they didn't know where he was at because of trouble and stuff. And we knew he was a gang member. And there, once a gang member, always a gang member. But he shacked up with a young lady and they had a couple of kids, poor as church mice. They didn't have much of anything. My wife would take food or clothes for the baby or, you know. And he would come around. He had a couple of chickens and a couple of fighting cocks. And he'd come around and say, "Hey, Willard, do you have some extra feed I could buy? Or I don't have any money right now. Could I just have a couple of pounds to feed my chickens?" Sure. I mixed my own feed. I always had a little bit of this, a little bit that left that didn't fit into 100-pound bag and stuff. So it may have been cow feed or it may have been layer feed or broiler feed, whatever. I just gave it to him. Not thinking that what I was doing for him was having a lasting effect down the road. Well, during the time he lived there, he had a bad accident. He was on the back of a pickup in a wreck, and he broke his arm really bad. He had to have surgery. And down there, the government hospitals won't do surgery unless they can get blood donors. Now, they don't have to be the same type of blood, but you got to have blood donors before they do surgery. Nobody in the village wanted to donate blood for him. He's a gang member. Why would you help him out? So my son and one of the church members went and donated blood for him. He still had a crooked arm, but he was able to use it. And we continue that relationship. Long story short, several years after we weren't there anymore, we were back to visit, and the man that I had hired to help me with the business, he worked for me five or six years, he told me a story. He said, you probably never know this, but I overheard Savino, the young man, and several others late at night, they were saying, the other men were saying, "Why haven't you gone to this gringo and demanded money from him? I mean, you should have gone. He would have had lots of money." And Salvino said, "Don't you touch that man. Don't you mess with him." This was while we were living there. But he had overheard that and didn't tell me till a number of years later. He said, "Don't you mess with him. He's my friend. He helps us. He's a good man." You know, we were curious why, because other people were, you know, we heard, over there, over there, over there. Everybody was being bothered. We were never bothered. My son would go deliver eggs, come back with hundreds of dollars in his pocket in cash because he had a whole picket load of eggs that he delivered that day and they would pay for it. We were never robbed. At least not. He was never robbed. Why? I wasn't doing this because I thought, I want to be a man of God. I want to do what's right. I want to be, you know, that I wasn't even thinking about that. I was just living there. I was working hard. I had it. He didn't. Sure. You can have this. I don't care. It's something that I think about a lot. Now we can be very intentional about this and still be okay. What I'm trying to say is I could have said, well, yeah, this makes me a proud man because I'm intentionally helping people and people look up to me. No, we can do these things without other people thinking that we're proud. Anyway, that's a personal story. I've got printed notes and I've got handwritten notes and I'm trying to read my handwriting. What about, are we generous business owners? As a Christian business owner, we have many opportunities to be generous. Roman talked about this last night, where people said, yeah, business owners don't give much to the church or to missions. It's the people who give $25. He says, business owners make it possible for you or for the employee to give those $25. While living in El Salvador, I had many opportunities, more than I wanted. And most times, people coming to me saying, I would like to borrow money. And I had done that in the first couple years and lost a couple $1,000s of my own money because people didn't pay it back. So I learned, I can't do this. I mean, I didn't loan mission money, I loaned personal money, and there's only a certain amount I had. So I determined that I would only give a certain amount. And that happened a number of times. I said, well, I can't loan you money, but I can give you some. Some people took it willingly, others not, because they wanted the $50, not the $10 that I said I could give them. There was a young man that came to me about 10 o'clock at night and begged to borrow $20. His daughter was sick. He needed to take her to the hospital to buy medicine. It was 10 o'clock at night. I mean, I reverted back. Now, this story is not a generous story. It's a stingy story. I reverted back to my, I'm not going to loan you money, but I can give you $10. And I gave him $10, and he left. The next morning, I found out that his daughter died. I would have gladly given him $200 if that meant he could have bought the medicine and found a doctor to save his daughter. I never did find details exactly what happened. But that's the story of what I didn't want to do. And it's a story that I don't want any of you to fall into. I mean, sure, you have your limits. You know what you can give. But we have such an opportunity to be generous. And it's a form of, I go back to this, it's a form of worship. It doesn't mean that everything you give needs to be tax deductible. And you can run me out of here if you disagree. It's nice, you want a tax receipt. Sure, I give to the church, I give to the mission. It's nice to have a tax deductible receipt. Sometimes we can be generous and give, whether it's money or time, and not be able to deduct it because John Doe out there can't give us a tax-deductible receipt. Thomas was the recipient of mutual aid, helping him build back his shop. I don't know. I bet you could ask him how many times was he on the other end helping other people. It's what we do, right? Sometimes we give. Sometimes we receive. And honestly, I'd always rather give than receive, because if you're on the receiving end of a generous person, it's probably because you got some trouble. I'd rather not have trouble. But when we do, it's nice to have people. And when we see people in trouble with needs, we can give. As Anabaptists, we've grown up learning how to work, right? We work hard. Now, maybe not like your dad. You know, I have an uncle that from the time he was 6 years old, I think, till he was old enough to leave home, he lived with an uncle during the week because his parents couldn't. I don't know, was it because his parents couldn't really provide for him, or because I found out years later that he never did get along with his dad. But at a very young age, he would live with his uncle, go to school, come home, work, you know. We all learn the value of hard work. What does that look like in your business? 16-hour days? I hope not. Does it mean doing everything yourself? I hope not. How can you run a business doing everything yourself? Hard work is necessary, but finding people to help you in that hard work is very important. I mean, in our Airbnb business, Sharon does clean some of the houses, but she has other ladies that help her clean, and they do the majority of it. I try to keep up with the maintenance, but I travel some working for Asad. Well, I know people. I know people who can do electrical work. I know people who clean out sewer lines. And by the way, even if I'm home, I don't clean out sewer lines. I know somebody who does, who has the right equipment. But I'm willing to do it. I've done it when I couldn't get someone to do it. I'm not afraid of hard work. I've never been afraid of hard work. And that's why my back hurts today. What am I saying? I'm saying hard work is necessary. Diligence is necessary. Teaching your employees the value of being diligent is necessary. But surround yourself with people to help you. Be surprised how much better your business can flourish. How many of us pray daily? How many of us pray daily and ask God for wisdom as we operate our business? When things are going well, do we still remember to ask God for wisdom? James 1 says that God gives generously to anyone who asks him, if he asks for wisdom. God promises to direct the paths of those who ask him and trust him. So I realized that what I thought was 30, 40 minutes might not be quite that, but I'm going to conclude here by saying that doing business God's way is not just about following rules or making ethical decisions. It's living out our faith in the world, in the marketplace. It's about bringing glory to God. It's being a witness to God's love, to God's truth, and using our business as a platform to serve those around us. As we maintain our integrity, as we prioritize people, and as we trust God for provision, we create a business that is not only successful, but it's a reflection of God's kingdom here on the earth. Thank you for introducing that idea, because if we view our business as an extension or as part of God's kingdom, it totally changes how we operate it. So it's not just simply a way of achieving financial success, but it's a way to fulfill a higher calling. So whether God calls us to being a business owner or an employee, and notice I didn't say simply an employee. I said a business owner or an employee, because one is as important as another in God's kingdom. Our focus is to honor God. Now, what better way to, let me rephrase that, because I was going to say, what better way to honor God and bring people to a relationship with God, because being a preacher is very important. Doing this on a Sunday morning and preaching the truth from the Word of God is very important. But living your faith out Monday through Saturday, out there, will probably speak more to people. You'll reach more people in a positive way than you will thundering the truth of God from the pulpit. Think about it. You can come to me. We can talk about it. I'm not minimizing the one to maximize the other. I am just saying, as business owners, we reach a lot of people.